Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I am the net control operator for this Limar technical net. It's been going strong for over 45 years, and every Sunday night at around 8 o'clock, we get together in front of our radios, and we chat with each other. We learn from each other, we teach each other, and we entertain each other, hopefully. And I welcome you again, and thank you for coming back this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. Let me drop for a second, and I will give you the usual links. Okay, if you would like to reach me via email, one of my many email addresses is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. That'll reach me. Also, if you want to contact the Paul WS2N and ask him about some space or NASA-related story and see if he'll comment on it at the next technical net, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. Also, we offer a link page of interesting articles on YouTube that we've seen in the past week. I cut and paste them, and then I publish them over the weekend. One particular one is you might find interesting, and we'll talk a little bit about it later on. It's about amateur radio. It's kind of the history going way back to the tinkerers before there was an FCC, and even before there was any kind of organization. It was just a bunch of guys interested in stuff. And also, it's kind of a telltale sign that it's artificial intelligence, either it's just a voice synthesis or generation entirely. And I'll be curious to see if any of you people notice the giveaway. So I don't expect you to stop what you're doing and listening to the YouTube right now. Some of you no doubt have noticed it before, because if you use the YouTube enough, you'll find that the algorithm kind of knows about you and will probably select this particular YouTube. So we'll talk about it later. But the YouTube itself, the link is available at the top of my link page, which you get to by typing roy.ac2ga.com. Let me break for a sec. Okay, let's see. We offer an audio stream on the Internet. You just type into your browser technet.ac2ga.com, and it will play what's going on the Limark repeater. I used to use it just for the technical net, but I kept it live the rest of the week because some people asked me to do that. So that if you find yourself in a situation where you're wondering what's going on the repeater but don't have a radio, you just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that'll give you an audio stream coming directly from the Glen Oaks repeater. Also, I'd like to remind people that Mike KC2NJI has a great archive site. His website is amateurradio.tv. If you go to it, you can see archives of the technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who either moved away from the area over all these years or unfortunately become silent keys through the years. A lot of very useful information on that site. Let me drop for a second, and I will return and tell you what we got planned for tonight. Okay, we have the basic standard operating TechNet tonight, no guests or anything. I will present you with a couple of short little stories about about AI in the news, and give you an opportunity to respond thereafter. But a lot of times people hold their AI-related questions or thoughts until later on into the main segment of the technical net. That should take us, we will have when we're done with that, we go to the main segment, questions, comments, and topics for discussion. I'll ask people to tell me their first name, their call sign, whether it's amateur radio-related or just science and technology, and we'll try and go to them in what I would prefer the order approximately was short amateur radio questions, then short technical questions, and then if anyone has any long-term presentations that they want to present, save it until the end so that people can ask their questions, get their answers, hopefully, and move on rather than sit and wait for an hour and a half to have something that takes a minute or two to be answered. So I would appreciate if people kind of self-sort themselves that way. That should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will join us for the SpaceNet report, and that presentation will take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So that's the plan. If my shack survives and the repeater works the way it's supposed to, and I don't get kicked off of Voltar too many times. Usually it's one or two times every Sunday night. So if I appear to disappear, try not to flood the repeater with a bunch of questions like, where did Roy go? Just kind of give us a little pause, and I'll reset a few things and try to get back onto the repeater. So that's the game plan. So I will drop and tell you a couple of little short bits of AI news. Okay, you no doubt noticed from last week that the previous week had, I think, at least three people who could not read a room. They were doing the speech at the graduation day and getting honorary doctorates and other such nonsense. But they decided to kind of promote AI to a bunch of graduating students who have been told for the last 2-3 years that they'll probably never be able to get a job because there's not going to be any entry jobs that aren't done by artificial intelligence. And so these people obviously got booed incessantly. They simply didn't understand, and they just kept trying. This made a dramatic effect generally on the tech bros. If you notice, this particular week they stopped promoting the idea that everyone under the age of 40 is going to be unemployed. They've changed their tune. They're saying that it's not necessarily going to take away any jobs, and they're trying to be a little bit more optimistic. And this particular week at commencement exercises, rather than guys who can't read the room, there were more than a few comedians who were giving their speeches and basically saying all kinds of nasty things about artificial intelligence and getting a lot of applause. So, you know, finally some people can read the room. Anyway, let's see what else we got here. Anthropic released a new iteration. If you recall, 4.7, which was Mythos, was possibly going to destroy the world by detecting all the flaws in software and breaking all the security. That apparently didn't happen because they brought out now Claude Opus 4.8, which is an iteration past Mythos. So we'll see what kind of boogeyman they have threatening us this week with Opus 4.8. Also, the company that makes Claude Opus, Anthropic, has almost reached $1 trillion of company valuation. So, you know, maybe someday they'll actually make a profit. We can all dream. Meta has developed a new subscription plan for one of its AI-focused a platform, so it should be interesting to see what becomes of that. There was an Illinois legislator passed a big AI safety bill, so it'll be interesting to see that how that works as it goes through the courts and people fight it. And the Vatican involved itself in AI. Pope Leo published a massive encyclical on the risks of artificial intelligence. So it's nice to know that the Catholic Church is in for the fight, make it more lively. So that's pretty much it for this past week. If anyone has any comments about any of these stories or AI in general and want to vent them now, feel free. It's Push to Talk. Okay, I guess, as I said before, eventually, usually, during these technical nets, there's a time in the middle of the main segment where someone brings up AI and we end up talking about AI twice in one night. So we'll probably get around to AI again in some form later on in the night. But now we're into the main segment, questions, comments, and topics. Again, try and get on the list early if you have a short question. Try to make it amateur radio related, but we will deal with science and technology as well, and leave the presentations toward the end of the technical mess. So that's my recommendations and suggestions. Let the games begin. Have your fingers on the push talk and put your name on our lovely list for tonight.
KD2VHD.
KM2, and you say again after everybody.
Anyone else want to put their name on the list?
K2NE.
K2HAL.
Was that K2HAL?
Kilo Echo 2 Alpha Juliet Oscar.
Okay, what's your first name, sir?
First person of Jose Juliet Oscar.
Okay, Jose, very good. So I got Jim, I got Wes, I got Sam, I got Jose. Anyone else want to put your name on the list for tonight? I mean, hopefully we'll still have openings later on, but better get them on as early as we can. Okay, Jim, you're first up. What do you got for us tonight?
Just a brief comment on the AI thing. I had a realization yesterday that does not rise to the level of a theory, but it is a postulate, a hypothesis, perhaps. It occurred to me that had AI been an issue in the day of the writing of the Bill of Rights, there likely would have been an Amendment 1.5 that said something to the effect of, let me preface this with the fact that AI is new to us, the schmucks, but I'm thinking it's been operating in the background in big places for a little while now. I don't think it's all that new for the big people, if you follow my drift. Maybe I'll drop a second. So in that fictional scenario, they're writing the Bill of Rights and they get to Amendment between 1 and 2. I can only imagine them writing something to the effect of the right of the people to keep and download AI shall not be infringed. Wouldn't have been in there somewhere. So I guess it's just a realization that AI is new to us, but it's not all that new, I imagine. Just a thought to ponder. Thanks, Roy. KD2BHD, back to net.
Okay. I mean, historically, if you go by the books, the concept of artificial intelligence kind of came up in the late 40s, early 50s, soon after vacuum tube-based digital computers were first built, and those were primarily for the war effort. You know, I mean, over in England, they used a massive device to break Enigma, the German code cipher. So it began around in the 50s, and everyone's kind of mentioned Alexa repeatedly on the technical net. It was a very simple keyword-driven program, usually written in BASIC, but you could write it in any of the available operating, programming languages. But it was very stupid. I mean, if you just kind of said, I'm bored, it would trigger on the board and say, why do you think you're bored? So it was rather dumb. It could be written in something like 100 lines of BASIC, and, except for if you wanted to extend the keyword in response portions of the algorithm. So artificial intelligence has kind of popped up and gone down and popped up and gone down. And back in the turn of the century, IBM was working feverishly on what they were calling expert systems, in which they hard-coded algorithms with a large amount of medical expertise. And the idea was you could rent out an IBM and it would help you diagnose things. Also, they had a degree of reading radiology images, so they tried that. I don't think they ever made much money off of that. It was always semi-experimental, and it wasn't really as sophisticated. The basis for modern-day, what we call artificial intelligence, which unfortunately is really a marketing term, I don't know what's the matter with some people. Anyway, what was fundamental was that Google, who has a artificial intelligence division, wrote a historic paper on what we now call generative transform methods, which improved the ability to create sort of artificial intelligence. Google wrote the paper, published the paper, and apparently took a nap because it took years later for Sam Altman and a whole bunch of AI specialists to design ChatGPT that basically just exploded into the consciousness. Very few people, including the board of directors of OpenAI, were aware that ChatGPT was going to be released and was going to be that profoundly game-changing. So as far as we're concerned, what we call usually artificial intelligence, which again is more marketing than anything else, it has a basis in a 2017 paper from Google on generative transform. And they basically using the same method, some refinement, and just increasing the training material exponentially along the way. The early training tables were very small. Nowadays, the only thing, they don't really tell you how big the training table is anymore, the parameters are, but it's been suggested that over a trillion parameters are programmed into modern-day models of AI. So it's not like we've had AI and the government's been hiding it. Like I said, it was a surprise even to the people who thought that they ran OpenAI when Sam Altman apparently was the guy running OpenAI. So just for historical purposes, if people want to keep an eye on the ball of where it came from and possibly predict where it might go to, that's the story that's been published. I see no reason to disbelieve, but you don't have to take my word for it or the written word.
I tend to think that the big power folks have been using some proprietary version of it for some time now. I don't know that, but it seems likely. But thank you, Roy, for entertaining the idea.
Okay. Again, there's nothing historically to suggest that. We've had things that we sort of call AI, but they were not very good. They couldn't get IBM to have a profitable expert system, and other than curiosities in IT labs, really didn't amount to anything. And you could believe that there's some kind of parallel technology world out there where people with a lot of money have stuff that we won't hear about for another 10, 20 years. But you can pretty much document where Generative Transform popped up in the research paper and where Sam Altman woke up one day and decided he wants to be a trillionaire, just like Elon wanted. But you know, you're free to have your own opinions and theories. Okay, let's move on. Sam, what do you got for us today?
Hi, Roy. K2NE here. Sam, Park Slope. You raised something very interesting earlier today about AI on YouTube, and I'm curious as to how can you discern if it's an AI-generated type production? That's one question, and second question, of course, is it a copyright protection for AI-generated YouTube or AI-generated material? And finally, I was wondering about the mechanical voices, that it seems to be the same type that permeates a lot of the YouTube. But anyway, going back to the key question, how do you know you have AI involved with a YouTube production? Back to you, Roy.
Unfortunately, with great difficulty. Theoretically, if you kind of click the about on a YouTube, they're supposed to admit it. It should be on the right-hand side. It'll say that that synthetic artificial intelligence material was included in the presentation. But they keep it incredibly vague so that you could theoretically request YouTube to insert foreign language subtitles, and it'll use AI to do that, and theoretically that could be the total basis for the AI involved in a YouTube video. It won't tell you specifically whether imagery was artificial, voice synthesis was artificial, unless they volunteer it themselves, or more important, content. And that's where copyright and such gets particularly troublesome. As far as I'm aware, there are places that let you do this, you just kind of feed it with a prompt of a subject. And depending upon the settings, they'll have one person do a presentation on the subject, or if you want, you could have two people discussing the subject back and forth. And, of course, people are synthesized, the voices are synthesized, and the content is synthesized. Something like that, I don't think you could legitimately copyright. You might be able to partially copyright a YouTube if you wrote a script, or if the images are images you created or owned without going to an AI. But you know, it depends. You can have it totally copyrightable if it's yours and yours alone, or partially, or nothing. There's been more than a few cases where the court, I believe, found that you cannot a machine cannot copyright a product. And if a machine made it and not a human being, then you can't copyright it. So that's my understanding as far as that goes.
It is sounded really interesting. The way AWRL was broken. I know some other artifacts like that stuff I watched. By the way, Roy, I don't know if you had a chance to get a Limark blog that the monthly publication came out and distributed on the net yesterday or today. But on page 6, it seems that the board received an email regarding that moderator, the person hospitalized at that time. I knew that shit came up for me. I'm just curious. Anyway, that you and I'm standing by.
No, I got it in my I got an email with a link, and I haven't gotten around to clicking it. It would not be the first or the third or the 300th. Long before I had my license, Dick was kind of getting annoying email from people who had ideas of how to run the show. God bless them all. Maybe they should go off and get their own net if they're having problems with ours here.
All I know is that Limark and King County Radio Club are lucky and privileged to have you run there. That's when you do. So that's fine. That's anyway. I'll be living in Danny Bay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sam. By the way, just to extend a little bit, the more you see of artificial intelligence generated voices and images and and content. The more you get a sense for their origin. Content is very weird. They seem to have a similar way of describing almost anything. They tend to list things in triplicates, and they tend to also describe things as not this but that. There's a lot of that in artificial intelligence synthesized text, and when it's generated into a YouTube. You'll see them doing those comparisons. You know, they'll say it's not that he's brave, but that he's foolish. Most people use that occasionally, but artificial intelligence seems to want to throw that in at least once a paragraph. Another thing, voice synthesis, they have this annoying tendency to take very simple words and mispronounce them. So there's all kinds of words that regular people don't ever do that for some reason, but AI almost always does. Especially at one point I was watching a couple of YouTubes about MASH, and artificial intelligence speech synthesis cannot handle the movie or the TV show MASH. They keep on spelling it out. They'll say M period, A period, S period, H period, instead of just MASH. And we've all kind of talked about image synthesis with artificial intelligence. They used to have a really annoying habit of people had six fingers, they had seven fingers, they had three fingers, they had two right hands, their legs would kind of fuse together and crisscross. So they really had problems rendering the human form for some strange reason. So they've gotten a lot better with that, but it still occasionally pops up. So you can kind of, there are telltales. And the annoying and problematic thing is as life goes on and as the people upgrading the software, they're fixing those. So it's a little bit more difficult to know exactly the source of your information. And again, because generative transforms have this unfortunate tendency to hallucinate, once you're dealing with an AI source, you can't tell for sure if they're hallucinating, because a lot of people who use AI tend to be a bit lazy, or they get lazy. And, you know, otherwise they would have found that the YouTube for that amateur radio history kept on calling the ARRL the ARRLL. You know, I think they did it at least three times in the video, because the whole point of the exercise is to do as little work and just churn out as much AdSense money as possible. They tend not to check their work, so that's another big flaw with AI.
I appreciate that you posted it on your website. The link was interesting. The topic also interesting about the rise of wall ham radio. It is a real question, a real problem, you know, up in the air, because apparently the bands aren't used. They come more frequently, so there is a thing going on at the time about ham radio, the bands they have. Anyway, back to my
okay. Question. Yeah, the only problem I have is it was very up-to-date if it was, say, 10 or 12 years ago. I think we kind of jumped over a bit of a hump. I see locally that we have generally more younger members than we had when I first got my license. I used to make the joke myself that the average age of an amateur radio operator is 70. I think that's gone down by a couple of years. I think that's a good sign. I can't tell you exactly the sociological reasons why, except that the efforts of a lot of good hams bring younger people into the hobby. So it is a good, it's an interesting subject. It's a useful subject. They're kind of, I think they're a little bit more pessimistic, and most people complain that I'm pessimistic, than needs be for these particular days. But it's an interesting topic for YouTube, and it's well produced, even if it is by artificial intelligence. So I think it's a good idea. You go over, click roy.ac2ts.com on your website, and I think it's the first thing up there is a YouTube link for where are the 750,000 amateur radio operators gone. So if you want to discuss it next week, that's certainly an option.
Copy that, Roy. Thank you.
Okay, Jose, what do you got for us tonight? Jose, are you out there? I guess he's out the way. Anyone else want to put their name on the list for tonight?
Net Control, you got K2, Hotel Zulu Echo, Bronx, New York. Very interesting tonight. Just enjoying the net. I wanted to give you one for the numbers, buddy, and we appreciate it. Tom over here in the Bronx. Back here.
Okay, very good, Tom. Do you have other people linked together like you did the other time?
Actually, it's very quiet tonight, to be honest with you. No, I'm just here alone at the moment. But it is definitely a pleasure, like I said. Very, very interesting. Back to you.
Okay, very good. Good. I'm glad to hear you. You know, a lot of people kind of, they wander by, they come, and then they go. So I'm glad that you came back.
My pleasure, my friend. You do a wonderful man. Like I said, from the beginning, I've been here. So I'm actually logging on the Echolink site and everything, so I'm not running the radio or nothing. So it's coming in nicely. And back to you, and we'll be listening. K2AZE. Great job, my friend.
Okay, very good. John, N2ZC, are you out there?
Yep, listening on the side here. What's going on there?
I just thought last week you told us that you had one extra comment to make, which you were going to make today, because you didn't want to kind of clog up the TechNet last week.
Yeah, if it's a good time, I'll bring it up. What happened was I fully intended to, and I said, man, I'm gonna fall asleep. I'm not putting my name on this. And I don't know, now I got a second life. You know how that happens. Sometimes you sit on the couch and you just feel that call and I can't resist it, but I don't know what happened. So if it's a good time, I'll bring that up.
Sure.
Yeah, so as I said, I attended Aiton and I went to one of their seminars, a mathematical explanation of how tuners work, which, you know, can sound intimidating, but it was really broken down. It was a nice review of this mix chart, and the guy obviously, in my opinion, really understood it. Because I haven't used MixChart in a long, long time, and maybe it was always one of those things. Got it, and then tomorrow you lost it again. But so it was nice, it was enjoyable, and it was, for me personally, a great refresher. And so I took the opportunity to question him on that thing that had been nagging at me with the common mode and the twin lead. And his explanation to me was that the common mode, and you know, I gave him the whole thing, like I did here with our nice explanation for Wacko, that was troubling me, you know, how the common mode travel, where did it travel, how. Does it travel? And he told me that the common mode travels down twin leads on the same corner. And I heard that. We have that nice explanation with the coax, etc. And, you know, they were at the end of the seminar. People were hanging around. Let me drop them a minute. Okay, so it was the end of the seminar, and, you know, so when I asked him, he gave me, you know, and the people waiting, and just like on the net, you want to be respectful, and I don't want to get into a long thing about it. So I actually ambushed when he left. And, you know, I said to him, so, you know, the whole thing is, as traveling down the coax, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. I have the simulation, like, you know, as I told you, and, putting it on the coax, and it seems to be like in a wave theory. So now you have 180-degree wave coming in the other direction, and if you had, you know, 600 volt coming up, now you'll have 400. So just, you know, kind of diminish it. And you know what? The guy knew his stuff. You know, I could tell by his lecture and everything, because it was something that I overlooked, and when he said it, it was one of those aha moments. But yeah, but it's not necessarily going to be 180 degrees out of phase. But then therefore, when your differential current are at your zero point, this 180 isn't also. It's going to have a value. You know, it's if it's at 180, you know, it would be at zero. But if it's not, if it's 135, 120 out of phase, it's going to then have an opportunity to come back down, because you can have zero, or it's going to be a higher at certain point on the differential wave. Then, you know, the common mode will be stronger than the differential. And up until a certain point, so, you know what? When he said that, you know, to me, that was like, okay, that answered it. But, you know, like my whole thing was, you know, I've gotten shocked. People got shocked with it coming down the line, but how? So, you know what? Right. I think now it seems that you can have 180-degree common mode coming down in coax. I put it in twin leads, is what I'm surmising now, but if not 180-degree, you would. So what? That's what I want to bring back in the net. Number two, to lose Charlie.
Okay, thanks, John. I'm not really getting a ha moment. You know, it just, again, it just sounds like something that, you know, you could work with someplace somehow, but it's not giving me the aha, of course, type of eureka moment, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, you know, to me, the route, you know, how is it traveling down the twin leads? How? That was, you know, that was the question I brought to you, matter of fact. That was something that just jumped in my mind, and I asked you, and, you know, you were done with it, too, as I was, and now I can see it. You know, I know they do this, like, with broadband, and so they send a lot of different signals, and they're out of phase, and they're not interacting, or they are interacting, but not completely knocking each other out, and stuff. So that was, to me, you know, something, again, that I overlooked, and didn't think of. It was right there, not very complicated, but I was just assuming when it got to the antenna, and coming back down 180 degrees out of phase, coming back down the opposite direction. direction. But, you know, again, it said not necessarily going to be 180 degrees. It could be, you know, 160, 150, 120. And then, yeah, like I say, now you're going to have it. It will, the differential will knock it down. You know, always we said that it's a stronger signal on most of the way. But then in those, it is out of phase like that. When it's lower in voltage or amperage, you know, the common mode would be able to, what I really think about more, I don't know if it'll come down in like voltage or whistle be like a, you know, sine wave type thing, but that's what I think. But it's just very small. You know, it just, to me at least, yeah, it makes a light go off where I could see how this could happen.
Okay, I'm glad that you were satisfied. I guess I'm more difficult. I mean, as far as I can figure, you know, I mean, reflections of waveforms are usually 180 degrees out of phase, you know, unless they're also going through some kind of component like additional inductance or capacitor. I mean, you know, light that you know, reflect off of a mirror is going to be, you know, at that incidence angle and only at that incidence angle. There's nothing you can kind of fudge around the reflection to change the, you know, the nature of how electromagnetic waves reflect off of differing impedance and such. So, okay. I'm going to put this next to my bucket of why the hell near wave and far wave has different difference in magnetic and electric charge you know, degrees. They're 90 degrees offset in the near field and 0 degrees in the far field. So I don't know. I don't think I've yet reached my destination. I probably have to walk a few more miles before I hit it.
Yeah, well, you know, Roy, what you just said, that was the original assumption. That just was intuitive and came to my mind about, you know, incident and questions and et cetera being 180. I don't know, maybe it was just because of that whole worm and you know, talking about, you know, the capacitance and the Mitch chart and how it, you know, all the things that are going on with all of that. But again, you know, look, you made a point. Again, it's valid. We're, all right, it shifted whatever it shifted through the phases, whatever the phases and the reflection should be 180. Boy, you know, you're ruined a good night sleep, boy. You know, I gotta tell you something. Whatever, getting good night sleep. Now you might have ruined it. So, that was his explanation, and at least it's something that I can be, you know, something to think about now. How or why would the reflection be in a different phase other than 180? But, still some room for some doubt and thought there.
Okay, yeah, I don't want to rain on your parade. I understand that it feels good when you have that aha moment and, you know, a belief that you finally figured something that's been scratching at you for a long time. I don't want to, you know, I'm kind of doing it for myself. I'm not attempting to rain on your particular parade.
Too late. No, listen, that's what, you know, the technet is for. Yeah, you know, when you can, you're losing your own bubble here. You know, I wish he was part of the conversation. You know, maybe he could have shined some light on something, or maybe he would have had the backtrack he wanted. It's one of those things that eventually we'll figure it out and we'll get back. So that was it, Roy. It didn't turn, you know, it didn't turn into the big hit that I thought it was. At least it was for me for a little while. But, you know, we'll knock it around more and maybe someone else will leave and come up with something.
Okay, I do appreciate you bringing back up the subject and at least offering some semblance of an answer to the question. Perhaps as time goes on, some of our electrical engineers out there that don't seem to be talkative on the net as much as they once were will kind of get into a talkative mood and offer us some pearls of wisdom. Or eventually, if Sam Altman, you know, gets his dream come true of a super artificial intelligence, we might ask them before they take over the world.
Yeah, listen, we'll take anything for a night sleep. But, it's something we'll ponder out. And, you know, I just wanted to, while I do have a quarter second, I was listening to your AI presentation, and I believe you said, I don't want to put words in your mouth, did you say Anthropic? Was it Anthropic? There's a $1 trillion valuation. Did I hear that right?
Yeah, Anthropic is when Sam Altman was thrown off of OpenAI, and he played some games in the background and had Microsoft really twist twist arms and get him reestablished as president as OpenAI. One of the people that was working at OpenAI at the time quit and started up his own AI, Anthropic. He's an interesting guy. I think he's a physicist more than he is an IT guy. But then Sam Altman has no expertise in artificial intelligence. He's just a guy who can talk a lot of people into investing a lot of money. So, but yeah, that was Anthropic. Anthropic used to be the secondary type of second most important AI company until maybe a couple of months ago, and apparently OpenAI couldn't keep up with agent and specific model for a business. I think the problem was that Anthropic turned toward the business sector while OpenAI was still looking to make most of their money by individual licenses, you know, people who wanted to chat with a ChatGPT and such.
What was that gentleman's name, if you recall, with the Anthropic? And if I understood you correctly, that guy who left, correctly left OpenAI, and what was his name?
Yeah, he was the guy who left, Daniela Amodi.
Okay, he doesn't seem to have that name recognition, Altman. I guess with that, that big coordinator, him and Elon, here we got his name recognition. But I don't follow as well. You're my biggest, the worst shot maybe, right? The table will be gone and all, but, okay, $1 trillion, man, oh man, and I'm profiting. Wow. You know, we all live through that other, the internet bubble, and yeah, I mean, wow, can't go on forever.
Nope, unfortunately not. That's what's giving a lot of these guys who keep on shorting these companies a lot of trouble, because, you know, people have been shorting things like a Tesla for years now, and somehow it's always staying up there at a ridiculously high price. But Amodi is not as flashy as Sam Altman is. Sam Altman always kind of puts himself in the middle of everything. So he's the guy that everyone pretty much recognizes. He's sort of like the next generation version of Elon Musk.
He's better at getting that name out there. That, you know, what that no publicity is bad publicity, type theory, and you know, being well known, etc. I mean, they're players right now. They're players, but you know, show me the money, and it's not there. Once you look through that internet bubble, you know, you don't forget it. we all took a whack in that one. So yeah, I've been for a long time. I'm on a sort of rule myself, my investment of 10%. I take that money off the table. I've been leaving the bold in, but that 10% should be coming off. And I gotta be honest with you, I am just totally amazed at some mutual funds how often they're up 10%, and I'm taking money off the table. And I'm like, wow, I just 10% off not even 2 months ago, or another 10%. We've seen it before, and I have the same feeling with the Bitcoin too. Never understood it. Never understood the value. There is no value. You know, the value is what people were willing to pay for it. You know, that whole thing. So that's another one. But that sort of has a whole theory behind it, following which may or may not be correct. So very interesting times we live in.
Yeah, as I often respond to that with the saying that the Chinese curse. But I kind of believe in the last fool principle, which is if you can find a fool to give you a profit by trading your worthless stuff with him, then you've succeeded. It's just you don't want to be the last fool.
Yeah, I had that conversation with a group of people, and they were but one or two were betting in this local investor, the returns. Oh no, you got to get into it. And, then I just looked in the internet and I showed them Ponzi, and amazingly they never heard of a Ponzi scheme. That kind of sounds like what you're in right now, doesn't it? And look how it ends. They don't even know what's a Ponzi scheme. Amazing how long I've known some of them that have literally gone on decades. And but they did come to an end, but they come to an end. Like you said, last man standing, not good.
Yeah, but people fall for a Ponzi scheme to this very day. There's a ruckus with, I forget the guy's name. He's a Iranian. He moved here as a kid, and he has a podcast. He does conservative politics, and he used to own a insurance scam. Just same thing like Amway, where you basically make your money with your life insurance brokers, because they have to pay all kinds of fees up front, so you hardly ever make any money off of the life insurance policies themselves. and he does business get-togethers. So you can pay this whole $16,000 for a big get-together of entrepreneurs. And one of them, the chief sponsor, was a grifter who had a Ponzi scheme that that basically stole about $400 million off of people who attended these business sessions. Unfortunately, so you know they're still making a lot of money off of Ponzi schemes. Unfortunately.
Yeah, and the bubble, the valuation, you know, when and everything went. You know, that internet bubble, I don't got to tell you, that went on for a long time, And I remember right before it blew apart. There was some commentator that said, and he got a lot of press, but is anybody is left behind. And then not shortly after, I don't know if it was weeks or months, boy, the whole thing blew apart. But somebody else came back to me. You know, I heard that they came back, you know, and you know, everybody was licking their wounds after that. And, you know, I remember so-and-so, Ed, and probably on that morning Joe or something, you know, one of the commentators. But that was a big one. You know, anybody who didn't have AOL in their core portfolio, you know, left behind, you know, train pass.
Yeah, that was a phenomenon. But at least, you know, there was you could get a little bit of value back after the fact. You know, once the internet kind of shook it off and started to grow again, there was a lot of dark fiber invested during those times, and they were actually able to repurpose that and use it, and you know, it regained value. But that's the problem with AI. The primarily, you know, all the investments have a very short lifespan. You know, NVIDIA is already getting ready to release their next generation of a GPU chipset. And basically, the ones that all these people bought for $1 trillion are going to be devalued. Not only that, but because the newer technology requires a different type of a data center, you can't just pull out some shelves and put in some next generation shelves. You'd have to, you know, gut the building and rewire it and hook up a much more sophisticated air conditioning and cooling technology. So that's going to probably make what people are going to suffer with this bubble bursting far worse.
You know, talking about AI, I was diagnosed with melanoma. You know, the more or less in mind, you know, the one that is, you know, I know you do, and I think I'm going to move a little bit down. But anyway, what's that more or less benign type of skin cancer? Right? What's that?
Well, melanoma is a specific type that is different levels of invasiveness. So, you know, they're sketching it superficially and then different classes for more involvement and deeper layers. But there's a lot of skin malignancies that are just annoying. You know, they cause the skin to easily peel off and such. So you need to kind of cut the lesion out, but it doesn't really invade the body that much.
Yeah, the reason I'm bringing it up was here to cut it out. But I, you know, of course, any kind of diagnosis, we'll jump on the computer, the layman, and we look and everything. And I went, you know, when I seen this, I got to run this by Roy. According to the AI, okay, if you go out in the sun, somebody like me in my 60s, you get all burnt up. Right? You get a really, 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 really bad burn. Burn that's bad enough, it's going to cause cancer. That cancer from that burn will not show up for another 20 years. Now, I've heard that when I was young, but I sort of thought as you get older and you get a burn or you know, or you do something, or that time frame kind of shrinks. Am I correct on that? That's what AI was saying. It almost sounded like, okay, if you're 70 years old and you get a burn or something, you don't live past 90, you won't get cancer from it. Would you say that's accurate?
Uh, I don't know what's going on. Someone out there is having a bad day. It sort of depends. It's not the rigor, you know. I mean, you can't take it to court for breaking the rules. Usually, these things are very, very, very slow growing. They damage the DNA. It heals itself somewhat. It goes along, but now you got slightly damaged DNA, then it gets exposed again. So it's not as much of the time period after the damage, but also the additive damage. Because chances are, if you're gonna get a lot of UV exposure when you're younger, you're probably gonna get some exposure as you get older. So it's a progressive sort of thing. I mean, there's basically the three major types of skin cancer. There's basal cell carcinoma, there's squamous cell carcinoma, and there's the melanoma that you mentioned.
Yeah, I had the basal cell. That was the one. Yeah. Yeah, whoever that is, they're a very weak station. The only one they could really bother is the echo label, you know, front of DNA, but everybody else was right over them. But, yeah. Okay, fine. Right. Look, that's all I had. If I come up with anything more on that, I'll probably bring it up. Like it or not. You do the same with the near field, far field. You know, you put that in my mind, too. It's never there, and now that's in there. That's something, not at the forefront, but something in the background that I'll do some reading on, too. You know, another one of those unexplained things, which I always gravitated to, something that I didn't understand. And that's why we gravitated towards women. Never understood them, you know? All right. PGS, November 2, Zulu Charlie. Back to Ness and back to your voice.
Okay, very good, John. Always a pleasure. I look forward to your future presentations, your comments and such. They always light up the house, so thank you so much.
And likewise, like the other gentleman, we all enjoy the net era. You know, just as another quick thing, at 8 night, I met quite a nice group of fellas from Yonkers, and we were talking, and, you know, I brought up, you know, the net era. I think it's why I brought up Ham Radio University, you know, just, you know, me being an ex-New York guy now in Florida, talking about the things I miss about New York, and they even said, oh, yeah, I go on the Limark repeater sometimes, you know, so Limark has always been well-known, man. Had a good standard out there, and I appreciate you, like everyone else does, for keeping up the tradition and the standard.
Thank you, John. I like the guys from Yonkers. I got I took my VE exams there.
You know, some clubs, I don't got to tell you, every club has a different personality. And the one I belong to, it's a good club, you know, down here in Citrus County. But there's another one in, I forgot where it is, but it's a little far, maybe 60 miles from here. And they don't even have meetings. They just have a meet-up where everybody goes to a diner or, you know, big place, and you order food, you squawk, and they're the thing of the club is friendly as amateur radio club in Florida. And that was the feeling I got with that Yonkers club here. Just what a nice, friendly bunch of guys. And they're, oh, yeah, we got a Brazilian contingent, and they bring down, they hold their food, and they're giving everybody, you know, different... It was like you're in a Brazilian restaurant. You know, I wasn't there for it, but they were explaining it. I know what they're talking about. Here goes the pork, here goes the steak, here goes the chicken, here goes this, here goes that. And they were just, you know, a friendly, nice bunch of guys. So, yeah, it was good to meet them. And they told me, here we are. We're playing, oh, we're here every year. So they got a tradition of going up to Dayton every year and settling themselves in up there. But unfortunately, they were saying, the one guy I was speaking to the most, you know, I don't know how much longer I'm going to want to do this ride. I tell you, I did. I had an uncle that in Pennsylvania I wanted to see before I went away. He was having some health problems. I definitely wanted to check in on him. And I did a ride up there, you know, and I straight through 900 miles. You know, that is a rough one.
Yeah, I can imagine. Anyway, they were very nice guys. I had a problem locally. Nearby VE exam site couldn't find anyone else who wanted to take the exams, and they didn't want to waste the time of three VE testers on just me. So they contacted me a couple of days before and canceled the thing. And, you know, down the road, eventually, they went out of business. But I went to the Yonkers, and I was the only one there to take the exam. There might have been 8 guys up front just hanging out with each other while I answered the questions, and they were wonderful.
Yeah, there's a friendly bunch of guys, really, you know, picking it up. You know, I remember Steve Mendelson used to always say, He used to say, you know, I'm a phantom ham radio operators. They get on and all they do is they talk about, and how is my signal? And, you know, you're 5'9", and, you know, for a brief contact, of course, you know, that nothing else to do, you know, if you're trying to get a faraway station, that's great. But I know what he meant. You know, some people, that's all they talk about. They get on the radio, and they just talk about their radio, they just talk about their signal. And he used to say, you know, when I get on my telephone, I don't talk about the telephone, what kind of phone I'm using, and the signal. He'd like to have a conversation, you know, sort of like what we do on his net. And some radio clubs are just strictly technical and blah, 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 and reading the minutes, and some are just like a party. And that's what that Yonkers was. Those guys, man, they had a bottle going around there and everything. These guys were, not that anybody was getting drunk or anybody was getting wobbly, but, you know, they were really just a friendly bunch of guys having a great time. And I just had by and, oh, you're from New York, and I just intended on keeping it moving. But, you know, they offered me a seat, sat down, and, you know, that turned into like an hour and a half. You know, a memory you're always going to have.
Yeah. I mean, the hobbies big enough for all types of people. The guys who want to collect a wallpaper, guys who just want to, just kind of tap them and move on quickly because they're very busy and they don't have any time for anything. You know, I mean, obviously, anyone who's listened to the technical net can kind of guesstimate that I'm a rag chewer at heart. I'm really interested in the technical details of everything. But, you know, I don't mind sitting and discussing things for a while. You know, some people love that. Other people, I've heard every excuse for shortening up a QSO. The guy has to finish his honeydew list, or he has to get ready for lunch, or whatever. There's lots of reasons to terminate a QSO. So, but I like graduating. I enjoy it.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
Last night, I'm not sure, was it in the evening? No, it was after 10 o'clock. I called the station in Israel, and we ran to 15, 20 minutes, and it was right after a pileup. And, this man is a very interesting story. And we had a very good time. It's good to write you.
I agree with you entirely. I mean, you know, sometimes you just don't have time for it. I understand. But generally speaking, and also, you know, God love everyone. You know, some people just don't have too much skill with the art of conversation. You know, there's more than a few people who can basically tell you what the weather is where they live and discuss a deli that closed down on the corner 15, 25 years ago. Different occupations, different types of people have different skill sets for conversations. I remember bumping into this very curious, interesting guy who was a retired Florida detective, and gee, could he run a conversation? You know, I mean, he would interview people, and it would be amazing to listen to his technique. A lot of people don't really have a job that requires them to have conversations with people, but the police detective certainly do.
Well, you know, you got to get more what you want in your life. If you don't know what you want, it's very hard to get what you want. If you don't want, it's easier to get what you want. And if you don't know what you want, you'll never get what you want.
You might get it accidentally.
Hardly, you know. Maybe you saw it on the TV.
I don't know. Sometimes people just kind of sort themselves into positions that are optimal for them. It's the lucky ones. There's a lot of people. The worst thing is people who have a job that they hate. Or even worse than that is if they have a family life that they hate. Because it takes up so much of their lives. But, you know, sometimes, you know, especially, you know, guys like conductors or such, they say that conductors have a longer lifespan than most occupations because the people enjoy their occupation. They, you know, it's stressful, but it's creatively useful and appreciated by them. So there's probably a lot of people who've kind of bumped into something that just works for them and they kept up with it. They didn't kind of aggressively chase it.
I think that if you know what you want, it's much easier to get it. If you take a chance, you know, then you can spend the rest of your life with it, you know?
Yeah, but most people, if you sit down and talk to them, they don't seem to know what they want. I mean, generalization. They want to be rich. But, you know, I mean, that doesn't really point you anywhere. So, you know, some people kind of know themselves well, but a lot of people are strangers to themselves. So, fortunately, again, they kind of fall into things that they're good at and and that ultimately give them a rewarding life experience.
If life is a journey, then knowledge is very useful.
Yeah, well, I tend to always think that knowledge is useful, but there are others who don't, and they're afraid. You know, ignorant is bliss is a very popular phrase.
Well, you know, ignorant can still mean that a person has the potential to be happy, you know. I think that's what it all adds up to anyway.
I don't know. The problem is that people are complicated and mostly irrational anyway, so, you know, what suits one hurts the other. You know, you just have to fine-tune things for the individual you're evaluating.
It's their journey, not mine, you know.
Yep.
Yeah, I just wanted to tell you, I'm doing some audio engineering. I'm using a software package, and it's a suite, so it has all the filters and effects in it. And right now I'm working on a 1-hour guitar and drum piece, and right now I'm rendering the audio, so 79%.
Oh, okay. What's the program called?
Ableton Live number 12 Week.
Oh, yeah. I've never used it, but I've heard people talk about it.
Well, I've been using Ableton product for a long time, and I realized that I have the ability to upgrade 4 count, and so I decided to do it.
Oh, okay. A lot of times upgrading is a good thing. Occasionally, there are some classes of software that I dread updating. Antivirus, because antivirus companies have this very weird pattern. When it first comes out, it's a relatively small but efficient and very useful. And as time goes on, the company decides that they need to add bloatware to make people think incorrectly that it's a much better product than the previous version was. And eventually it reaches a critical size of bloatware where it does nothing good. And usually I jump ship long before then. And usually they figure it out when people stop buying it or upgrading it, and they tighten it up again, but the cycle continues over and over and over again between bloat and small, efficient, and useful antivirus. There are other types of software that kind of go into boom and bust cycles as well.
But I tell you honestly, I'm nervous when I have an upgrade in my iPhone, you know, especially if it's a new upgrade, like a solid number 26.5, and so I stay away from it. I wait for there to be some more intermediate upgrade, and then we'll update. And what to say about this software? It has some it works really well with a newer computer.
Well, that's understandable. They tighten up the code. They take problematic portions, and they might recode them into machine language. There's all kinds of nice things that you could do over time to make an upgrade better. But again, you know, if you're trying to kind of make up useless things that the software you can advertise is capable of, that it doesn't really do that much. I mean, I live in fear of any company that's trying to sell me something that they call an optimizer. Usually it's a registry optimizer. I have never seen worse junk in my life than the stuff that companies promote as registry optimizers. Thankfully, the registry, it doesn't even come up in advertising anymore. I tend to think that a lot of people who use computers today don't even remember what the registry is.
Well, I tell you, Roy, this will probably be the last upgrade of this software that I bought. And the reason why I say it is because I think the newer upgrades that are coming are going to have incorporated in it the artificial intelligence. And I really don't want artificial intelligence in my music, except, you know, if I have control. And I want to have control of the product. I want to have control of all the layers of abstraction.
I would tend to think that this manufacturer sort of knows it. I mean, they cater to a professional group, so they'll have on and off switches. I doubt they're going to have defaults, unless maybe the lowest tier of the program.
Well, you know, it's so easy to make music with artificial intelligence these days, you know, and just because of that, I bought this upgrade, because I want to have control over all the parts of it. And with artificial intelligence, the big downfall, the big problem with it when you're making music is that you have absolutely no control.
Well, again, it depends on the programmer dialing in the right amount of granularity for control. I mean, if you're trying to promote and sell a low-tier, non-professional piece of software, people don't want to be confused by too many controls, and so you hook it up all into AI and have it do it by itself. All you do All you have to do is press go. But yeah, as the price of the software goes up and as the focus for the software becomes more professional, those people tend to prefer to have access to the the more granular control.
Well, you know, I went out to dinner with a woman who is involved in the art, and she said, "You know, David, I had no talent at all." She said, "Artificial intelligence is great for me because I can make art and I don't have to know anything about art."
Well, you get that takes me back to the old line about ignorance is bliss. I feel bad for people like that. They don't have I don't think they have an appreciation for creativity. If they think it's just pushing a button or, you know, just typing into a prompt, puppy in the rain type of thing. You know, to a degree, delusions of grandeur or what have you. That's not creativity. That's knowing how to type English.
Well, you know, I tried it out. I took a picture of a camera, an old camera, one of these old Nikon FE single-lens reflex cameras, a little bit beat up, and I uploaded it to the artificial intelligence, where you upload the picture to the machine. And as a result, came back, you know, an old camera that had rolls of film and that had an old leather bag and all this other stuff. It wasn't really that great.
Well, if you have no imagination and you have no artistic skills and you can't draw and you can't paint, it's a good simulation of something. It's not the end product, or it shouldn't be the end product, but again, people get increasingly quickly lazy when exposed to artificial intelligence and tend to allow the AI to do as much of the work as humanly possible. And so, yeah, but again, you know, I said earlier before, a lot of times if you look at a lot of computer-generated or artificial intelligence or graphic images, you can get a sense of what they are. They tend to be a kind of mediocrity average of all the stuff that you've seen on the internet, because that's what it is. It's basically being trained, and they're averaging all of these images that have already existed that were capable of training their artificial intelligence or graphic creation tools.
Well, back to the same thing. You got to know what you want in order to get it, I think.
Yeah. Well, like I said, some people can, some people can't. Just hope that they do the best job for their lives, because as far as I'm aware, you only get one chance at it.
Well, they say at some point in time, nobody's going to have to work. There's a thing called universal basic income, and they were developing that in the last administration. People didn't have to work, and they had enough money for most anything they would want, you know, within reason, and life was just really dandy.
Well, I'm unaware of that. It's always kind of in the future. Like, if anyone sits down and discusses economics in relation to Star Trek, they'll get a headache. Because for the most part, they don't talk about any currency. You know, there's no token, there's no dollars, there's no pesos. The Ferengi have a gold-pressed platinum, but otherwise, they don't seem to have an economic system.